Preacher ignored the war party's shot. A moment later, warriors let arrows fly.
Man, fire!
The charge buckles in a welter of flailing legs and hooves. Some awkwardness and confusion swept along the line of defenders on the parapet, but for the most part, things went smoothly as the men with empty rifles stepped back and the ones who'd been holding themselves in reserve moved forward. The charge came to a confused halt. The first group of men reloaded as fast as they could and without much delay, and they moved into place again.
Keep firing! Make it hot for them, boys!
Warriors began to turn and flee rather than face the lethal lead storm.
Tell the fellas to hold their fire!
Hold your fire!
The Blackfoot had left their dead, men and horses alike, sprawled on the ground. They would return for the bodies of their fallen comrades later, probably after dark. Until then, the corpses would have to lie in the sun, swelling and putrefying. The Blackfoot pulled back completely out of sight, going over the hill where they had made their dramatic appearance earlier. Preacher didn't believe for a second that they had given up, though, and said as much during a brief council of war with Langley and several other defenders, including Cortland, Freeman, and Harrigan. Langley clearly was not happy about having Cortland there, but he didn't say anything. Evidently, he was willing to put aside his animosity for the moment, since they were facing bigger troubles. On the parapet along all four walls of the fort, men stood watching tensely, alert for any signs of a renewed attack by the Blackfoot War Party.
So you think the Indians will attack again?
I reckon you can count on it. Even if Red Knife was killed in the fighting, and I got a feeling in my bones we ain't that lucky, the other war chiefs who thrown in with him will be mighty peeved at us now. They know they got us outnumbered by a lot. But they ain't gonna come straight at us out in the open again. An attack like that gives us all the advantage.
You think they'll try to sneak up to the fort at night?
They might. The men who are on sentry duty will have to keep their eyes open wide. If a few of those varmints get inside the wall somehow and open the gates, the rest of them will pour in before we can stop them. Langley, you're gonna need to post guards on that ditch that brings in water from the river.
We might be able to block it off completely.
No, we don't want to do that yet. The Blackfoot might decide to settle down and lay siege to the place. And in that case, we're going to need water. You got plenty of provisions and ammunition inside the walls?
We can hold out for several weeks if we have to, where those things are concerned. But we shouldn't have to.
How do you figure that?
Well, a supply boat from Fort Union will be here within the next week to 10 days. There'll be at least 50 men on it.
That's not enough to turn the odds in our favor. We'll still be outnumbered by 3-1.
Yes, but something else on that boat will make a difference.
Well, now why don't you just tell us what that is?
Cannons. 4 of them. Capable of firing 6-inch balls. The boat can sit in the middle of the river and bombard those savages until they're all blasted to smithereens.
Preacher smiled. He knew the Blackfoot would not be able to stand up to such a barrage.
The cannons are supposed to go in the blockhouses at each corner of the fort. But they'll save us before they're even unloaded.
Then all we have to do is hang on and keep the engines out of the fort until the boat gets here.
That's right.
Despite being optimistic, Preacher had a hunch that chore might not turn out to be quite as simple as the bourgeois made it sound.
You know, Langley, you might want to go in and let Judith know what's going on.
Oh, that's a good idea. She's probably frightened out of her wits, what with all the shooting. A woman needs her husband with her at a time like this.
Say, Preacher, I just got to thinking. Where's that big old dog of yours? He didn't come back with us.
He couldn't keep up with the horses as fast as they were running to stay ahead of those Blackfoot. He's smart enough to have peeled off and gotten out of harm's way. I reckon he's not far off. He'll hang around and fend for himself until I get a chance to find him.
I hope he's all right.
Hell, it'd take a whole pack of wolves to give dog any trouble. And even then, I ain't sure but what he'd have outnumbered.
Yeah. I'm gonna see how Rollins' doing. I ain't heard anything about him since we got back, and there hasn't been time to check on him until now.
You let me know what you find out. I think I'm gonna stay here and keep an eye on Red Knife's bunch for a while.
Harrigan came back about 10 minutes later, and the hangdog expression on his red-bearded face told Preacher all he needed to know. Rollin was still alive when he got there, but he only lasted a few minutes longer. From the air of tension gripping the fort, it seemed everyone expected the Blackfoot to attack again right away. But as the minutes and then the hours dragged past, it appeared that wasn't going to be the case. The lack of activity didn't make anyone relax, though. If anything, as the day went on, nerves grew more taut and hearts slugged harder in the chests of men watching from the walls. Around midday, Langley sought out Preacher on the parapet.
My wife wants you to come down and have something to eat.
I'm all right. Fellas have been passing around canteens, so nobody's getting too thirsty. And I don't have much of an appetite for food right now anyhow.
You've got to eat to keep your strength up. There's bound to be another attack sooner or later, and you'll have to help fight it off. Besides, Judith insisted.
Well, I can't very well argue with that then, can I?
I'll take your place here on the wall.
Preacher nodded his agreement. He went down the ladder and crossed the compound to the trading post. Stepping inside, it only took a second for his eyes to adjust to the dimness after the bright sunlight outside. Judith stood behind the counter at the rear of the room.
Hello, Preacher. I was hoping Ethan could convince you to come. We may be under attack by a horde of savages, but that's no reason to go hungry.
I reckon that's a good way to look at it.
She motioned for him to follow her into the living quarters. A plate with an antelope steak and a thick hunk of bread sat on the table.
The fare isn't very fancy, I'm afraid.
It's gonna do me just fine.
And I have coffee on the stove.
Oh, even better.
While Preacher ate, Judith sat down at the other end of the table. The scrutiny with which she regarded him made Preacher a little wary. He could tell something was on the lady's mind.
What are the chances we'll survive this?
We'll be fine. The fort's well built. The walls are plenty sturdy. We got plenty of powder and shot. We can hold out until that boat gets here from Fort Union with more men and those cannons your husband was talking about.
Yes, Ethan told me the same thing. He seemed quite confident. But I could see the fear in his eyes, Preacher. He thinks there's at least a chance the Indians will overrun us.
Well, anything's possible, I reckon.
In that case, I have a favor to ask of you. I want you to promise to protect me.
Well, now that's more along the lines of something your husband ought to be doing. Or even...
I'm afraid neither Ethan nor Wiley would actually do what I have in mind. You see, when I say that I want you to protect me, I mean that I want you to protect me from being captured by the savages.
Oh.
I take care of it myself, but I'm afraid that at the last minute I might falter in my resolve. And I don't want that to happen, Preacher. I really don't. So if you see there's no hope, perhaps you can come to me and...
Ma'am, it's best not to think about such things.
I have to think about it now. Later there may not be time.
You never know how a fight's going to go until you're in the middle of it. I can't make no promises, except that if I can, I'll do what you want, ma'am.
Thank you. That's a weight off my mind.
But you better keep a pistol close at hand, just in case.
And save it for myself?
That's up to you.
I think I can do it. I just wanted to be sure.
Neither one of them said anything else. When he returned to the parapet a little later, he didn't say anything to Langley about what he and Judith had talked about. He didn't see any point in it. The day continued to crawl by. The spring sun was warm and the growing stench from the bodies of warriors and horses got pretty bad. Preacher ignored it. He'd smelled worse in his time.
Should we send out scouts just to make sure the war party hasn't left? We'd feel rather foolish if we stayed holed up in here for a week or two until the boat gets here and it turned out all the Indians were gone.
I'd rather feel foolish than be dead. Anyway, sending out scouts isn't gonna accomplish anything except to get them killed. Red Knife's bunch is still out there.
But how can you be sure?
The bodies. Ain't gonna leave those poor varmints behind. They gotta be tended to and given a proper send-off to the spirit world.
I suppose you're right. I just hate this waiting.
Uh-huh. Red Knife's counting on that.
Finally, the sun slipped below the horizon. As soon as it did, Preacher knew the danger increased. Every instinct he possessed told him the Blackfoot would try something before morning. Darkness settled in and thickened quickly.
Langley, why don't you build a fire in the center of the compound? That way we'll have some light if the varmints come at us again.
Soon, flames were leaping high and casting their flickering glare around the inside of the fort. Preacher, Langley, Cortland, Freeman, and Harrigan stood together on the parapet, crouching slightly so their heads wouldn't be silhouetted against the glow from the fire behind them. The Blackfoot might not be very good shots, but there was no point in giving them easy targets.
I'll bet they try and sneak up to the wall and climb over it before we can stop them. They're stealthy bastards. We have to be ready for them.
They might try that. They might try something even worse.
Like what?
Preacher didn't have to reply, because the next instant they could all see the answer for themselves. Trailing streaks of fire, blazing arrows arched high in the sky and plunged down toward the fort.
Look out! Everyone take cover!
Some of the arrows fell among Cortland's horse herd. One of the arrows landed next to Preacher. He stomped it out quickly.
Put out any fires at start! Don't let the buildings burn!
The bonfire was in the middle of a large open area of hard-packed dirt. It wasn't gonna spread. The flaming arrows, though, were falling all over the fort. Quite a few landed on the roofs of buildings. Men grabbed buckets and raced to the ditch supplying water to the fort. They filled the buckets and ran back to throw the water on the spreading flames.
Men on the wall! Open fire on those redskins shooting those arrows!
Preacher thrust his rifle over the log. Other men followed his lead. Then the Blackfoot changed their tactics. Instead of firing flaming arrows, they launched regular arrows, again sending them high so they arched down into the fort. The shafts impaled several men as they tried to keep the fires from spreading. Suddenly, scores of warriors poured out of the darkness on all four sides of the fort and charged the walls. Some of them carried trunks of trees that had been felled and stripped of their branches, although several inches of those branches had been left to serve as handholds and footholds. If the Blackfoot succeeded in propping those tree trunks against the walls of the fort, they could scramble up them as easily as most men climb a ladder.
Stop them, men!
The defenders on the parapet and in the blockhouses kept shooting in the hope they would kill enough Blackfoot to break the back of the charge. Quint Harrigan appeared at Preacher's side.
I've been going round the walls, making sure everybody knows what to do. We're holding them off, Preacher.
For now.
Harrigan leveled his weapon.
Got another of the Red Devils.
Any of the fires from those arrows getting out of control?
Not yet. Leastways, I don't think so. But I've been a mite busy.
The Blackfoot were getting close. Preacher leaned the rifle against the wall and pulled two of his pistols from behind his belt. He leaned forward and thrust them over the wall.
Come and get it, you sons of bitches!
Some of the Blackfoot began to withdraw. Others milled around in confusion, which made them easy targets for the defenders on the wall. Preacher's head jerked around. He spotted a knot of struggling figures on the fort's eastern wall, around the corner from where he was. In the flickering light of flames, he caught a glimpse of painted warriors among the defenders clad in buckskin and homespun.
Quint, come on, they're inside the wall over yonder!
Preacher and Harrigan quickly made it to the breach. The preacher had his knife in hand. Preacher's left arm went around the neck of a Blackfoot about to brain a fallen defender with a war club. Preacher jerked the warrior back and planted the knife deep in his body from behind. With his left hand, he picked up a fallen tomahawk. Preacher looked around for another enemy to kill, but didn't see him. Blackfoot had fled. It took a few seconds for the realization to penetrate the red haze hanging over his brain. Quint Harrigan gripped his arm.
Preacher! Preacher, the Redskins are gone! They lit out! They're pulling back all around the fort!
Men stood at the wall firing rifles at the warriors as they fled into the night.
Injuns seldom double back after retreating. Once an attack's over, it's over. Till next time. You all right, Quint?
Banged up a mite. How about you? You got blood all over you.
Well, most of it ain't mine. I'll be fine. Let's go see what those varmints cost us this time.
They began working their way around the walls, checking on the dead and injured. The Blackfoot casualties were 5 or 6 times as many as those of the defenders. A section of the wall about 20 feet long was the only place the warriors had gotten into the fort. They had poured a lot of men into that gap, but most of them had died. Elsewhere around the walls, a man had died here and there, or been wounded by an arrow. Preacher and Harrigan descended the ladder to the ground. When Preacher did a quick count, he found that only 6 of the defenders had been killed, with 3 times that many suffering wounds, but most of them relatively minor.
We drove them off!
Don't go celebrating just yet. They'll be back.
Are you sure about that?
Sure as I can be. They still got us in a bad spot. They ain't just about to give up and go away. You seen Cortland and Freeman?
Not recently. And if anything happened to them, I don't care.
Well, you better care. If we're gonna hold out until that boat gets here, we're likely gonna need every man and every gun. I'll go hunt them down.
Preacher found the missing men. Cortland had made it through the battle unharmed. Freeman had a bloody gash on his forehead.
I'm all right. What's one more scar matter to a man who's already as ugly as sin?
Some of those animals are hurt, and it's going to have an effect on their value.
Yeah, they would have been a lot worse if the whole place had burned to the ground. And that could have happened mighty easy, too.
The roofs of the fur warehouse, a couple of storage buildings, and one barrack were charred, where flaming arrows had started small fires. Only the quick action by men risking their lives to fill buckets and throw water on the flames had saved the building.
There's got to be something we can do to keep those Redskins from trying that again.
Now, we can't see what they're doing in the dark, so we can't stop them from shooting those flaming arrows. But we can be better prepared when they do. I'll talk to Langley about having plenty of buckets already filled before night falls again. We should go ahead and wet down the roofs real good, too, to keep fires from starting so easy.
Good luck getting him to listen to any common sense idea.
Preacher left Cortland and Freeman taking a closer look at the horse herd, and he walked toward the trading post. Harrigan caught up to him along the way.
Hey, Preacher. You reckon we'd better toss the bodies of those savages out of the fort? It's liable to make the rest of the varmints even madder if they can't tend to them in a Blackfoot fashion.
I don't reckon they could get much madder at us than they already are, but you're right, it's the decent thing to do, and I don't see any reason not to be decent. Can you tend to getting that done, Quint?
Oh, sure. What are you gonna do?
I want to make sure Ms. Langley's all right and talk to Langley about getting ready for the next time Red Knife and his friends come calling.
Harrigan nodded and hurried away. Preacher had seen Langley disappearing to the trading post earlier, so he headed in that direction. Approaching the building, he noticed a small group of men standing on its porch.
What's going on here?
I tell you what's going on. Preacher, sorry, I didn't realize it was you.
Just tell me what this is all about.
Langley's got the door barred. After all that fighting, we need powder and shot, and he won't let us get in there to get it.
Let me through.
The crowd parted, and Preacher stepped up to the door.
Langley! It's Preacher! You boys just stay back until I get this all sorted out.
But we need...
Now you stay out here. I know what you need. I'll find out what's going on and when you can get it.
Preacher, what do you want?
There are fellas out there who need some more powder and shot before those Blackfoot make another run at us.
I know that, and I plan on letting them take whatever they need, but I have to make an accounting first.
An accounting?
That's right. The company will want to know exactly what happened to those goods, especially since I won't have any pelts to show for some of them.
Are you telling me that you're worried about those squinty-eyed varmints back east with their ledger books? You got hundreds of angry Blackfoot outside the walls of this fort, and you're counting pennies?
I've got a job to do. I was sent out here, and all the goods in this trading post were sent with me so I could sell and trade them and amass shipments of beaver pelts. Being attacked by the Indians doesn't change that.
All right. But whatever you've got to do, you'd best be quick about it. Now, I don't think Red Knife and his bunch will be back tonight, but we can't count on that. And you'd feel like a damn fool if you were in here counting rifle shot while 100 of those varmints were scrambling all over the walls with knives in their hands and murder in their hearts.
It won't take long, and then everyone can take what they need.
How's Mrs. Langley?
Terribly frightened, of course, but she's a brave woman. She's holding up well.
I'll give her my best. Settle down, take it easy. You'll get your ammunition.
Yeah, when the bourgeois finishes counting every ball and every bit of powder. We heard what he said. We're risking our lives for this outpost. Some of us have already been killed. He ought to throw the door open and let us take whatever we need.
Listen to me, damn it! We all fought side by side against them Blackfoot. And that includes Langley and the other fellows who work for the company. You start breaking up into different bunches now, and you may not be able to count on the man next to you when the war party shows up again. And you're gonna want to be able to count on him, because he may wind up saving your life.
If Preacher's right, this ain't the time to be worrying about such things.
It ain't the time to be worrying about having every cent of the company's money accounted for, neither. If this fort falls, the company loses everything.
Langley knows that, too. You give him a few minutes to finish what he's doing. I reckon you'll get all the powder and shot you need after that.
Well, we'll give him those few minutes like you want, Preacher, but he better not take too long.
Preacher stood in front of the door with his arms crossed. For the moment, an immovable sentry. He kept his face impassive, but inside, he was angry and frustrated that circumstances seemed to be maneuvering him into positions he did not particularly want to take. He had intervened in the rivalry between Langley and Cortland. Now he was defending Langley's actions on behalf of the company when he found them just as petty and irritating as the other men did. Luckily, he didn't have to wait long. Langley stepped out onto the porch and looked around. Most of the men were scowling at him.
Help yourselves to powder and shot, and any other supplies you need, too.
You gonna charge us for them later?
No, I'm not. And if my employers back in St. Louis don't like that, they can damn well find somebody else to run this fort. Assuming, of course, they don't have to do that anyway because my hair is hanging up in some Blackfoot lodge.
In that case, there probably won't be no fort left for anybody to run.
Langley stood aside and waved the men into the trading post.
You know I'll probably lose my job over this anyway, but those men are fighting for all of us. I have to give them whatever help I can.
That's the best way to look at it, all right.
Still, I'd better go inside and keep an eye on the situation.
Uh-huh. Might not be a bad idea.
Preacher had been right when he said the Blackfoot probably wouldn't attack again that night. Not a single arrow flew after the warriors retreated. Sometime during the hours of darkness, though, the bodies of the slain warriors disappeared from outside the walls. The Blackfoot had stolen up and reclaimed them, just as Harrigan had predicted. There was the matter of what to do about the defenders who'd been killed. As the sky began to turn gray in the east with the approach of dawn, Preacher tied a rope around one of the sharpened logs forming the stockade wall and let the other end drop outside the fort.
What are you doing, Preacher?
I'm going out to have a look around. We need to bury those poor fellows who didn't make it through the fight. But it ain't a good idea to open the gates and send out a burial detail until we're sure Red Knife and his varmints ain't lurking somewhere close by.
I suppose that makes sense. But you're going alone? Shouldn't you take someone with you? That fellow Harrigan, maybe.
No, I can move faster by myself, and if I need to move, chances are it'll be fast.
We could open the gates enough to let you out.
Rope's fine. Leave them gates just like they are. And when I'm gone, you pull this rope up, too. I'll holler when I'm ready for somebody to let it back down.
All right. You seem to know what you're doing.
You damn right I do.
Preacher had rigged a sling on his rifle so he could carry it over his shoulder. The long-barreled flintlock was loaded, and so were the four pistols he carried behind his belt. It was a small arsenal, but if he ran into Red Knife, more than likely he'd need every shot. The preacher climbed carefully over the wall and gripped the rope, while Langley and several other men watched. He braced his feet against the logs and walked down the wall. He looked up and motioned with his thumb for the men to pull the rope back up. One of them did so, coiling it as he brought it in. Preacher took his rifle from his shoulder and padded off into the gray shadows of dawn. After being stuck in the fort, it felt good to be out there, moving around, breathing in the fresh, cool air of early morning. All of his senses were fully alert as he trotted west along the Missouri River. He hadn't gone very far when his instincts warned him about a patch of darkness he recognized as a clump of brush. He slowed and brought his rifle to bear on the brush.
That is a damn good place for a couple of Red Knife's warriors to keep an eye on the fort.
He held off on the trigger as he recognized the large, shaggy shape bounding toward him.
Dog! Well, it's good to see you again, you old varmint. I knew you were bound to be around here somewhere and we'd run into each other sooner or later. Come on, we're scouting for Blackfoot.
Dog turned and loped toward the clump of brush from which he had emerged a few moments earlier.
Come on!
Dog stopped and looked back over his shoulder at the mountain man.
What is it, you old scutter? You got a rabbit or something in there?
Preacher stiffened, and his hands tightened on the rifle as he realized what Dog was trying to tell him. Something was in that brush, all right, and it represented a threat.
Let's just see what you got.
He used the barrel of the rifle to part the brush. The sun still wasn't up yet, but the eastern sky was rosy and golden, providing enough light for Preacher to see the buckskin-clad figure sprawled on the ground behind the brush. Three Blackfoot warriors lay there, dark pools of coppery-smelling blood around the heads of two of them. Dog had ripped out their throats, probably before they were fully aware of what was happening. From the looks of it, Preacher's speculation had been right. Red Knife had left the men there to watch the fort. The big curd savaged the third man as well, but he was still alive. Quickly but carefully, Preacher reached down and pulled the knife from its sheath on the warrior. He stuck it behind his belt and kicked the tomahawk laying beside the knife into the brush where it was well out of reach. He saw that the Blackfoot's injuries were severe. Big gashes covered his face and hands, and his right wrist was swollen and twisted unnaturally, showing the dog had broken it with a wrench of his powerful jaws. The man had bled quite a bit, and Preacher wouldn't have given good odds for his survival. But he was still alive now. Preacher wanted to talk to him. He set his rifle aside and knelt next to the warrior. He laid the keen blade against the man's throat and pressed down just enough that the warrior knew what it was.
You be still or I'll cut your throat.
Go ahead, you white eater of carrion. End my life so I may join my brothers in the spirit world.
You'll end up with them soon enough. Red Knife left you here to die.
Red Knife will cut off your head and stick it on a pole.
Why does Red Knife hate the white men so much?
Because white men killed his sons. They were only boys, and a group of trappers found them. They killed both boys and scalped them.
Damn.
Red Knife has sent runners to all the Blackfoot villages from here to the Shining Mountains. He will bring a mighty army of warriors to destroy the white man's fort and avenge his sons. He will wipe the white men from the face of the earth, which rightfully belongs to the true people.
That ain't gonna happen, old son. There ain't that many Blackfoot in the whole world.
Red Knight will burn the fort to the ground. The white men will all die. And the other white men will be too afraid to come into our lands.
Go to the spirit world, my friend. May the hunting there always be good.
I am not.
Preacher left the bodies where they had fallen. When the three warriors didn't come back, Red Knife would send men to search for him. Preacher wasn't quite sure what they would make of it when they found the bodies. The dead men looked like they'd been attacked by a pack of wolves. He resumed his scouting with Dog at his side. He went a mile upriver, circled back, skirted the ford, and explored the country east of the outpost. By the time he got back to Fort Gifford, the sun was well up, and he was confident there were no Blackfoot close by. As Preacher approached the fort, he saw rifle barrels sticking out over the walls, and he was glad the defenders weren't letting down their guard. A man appeared with the rope, holding it up as if asking Preacher if he wanted him to throw it down. The mountain man recognized Quint Harrigan's bristling red beard. Preacher shook his head and pointed at the gates.
Open them up. It's safe for the time being.
Ethan Langley strode outside the fort as soon as the opening was large enough. Harrigan was right behind him.
Oh, hell. I see you found that dog of yours.
What else did you find?
The Blackfoot have pulled back a ways. I don't know exactly where they are, but they're far enough off that we ought to have time to lay our dead to rest without them bothering us.
Several men emerged from the fort behind Langley and Harrigan, among them Wiley Cortland and Otis Freeman.
Maybe we ought to make a run for while we got the chance.
Where are you going to go? Red Knife's put out the call far and wide for more warriors. No white man's going to be safe anywhere in these parts until that varmint's dead.
So what are you saying, that we should just wait here for those savages to kill us?
We should hold out until the supply boat gets here with more men and those cannons. When they do, we'll wipe Red Knife and his men off the face of the earth.
A wry smile tugged at the corners of Preacher's mouth. The bourgeois had no way of knowing it, but he had just echoed the threat made by that dying Blackfoot warrior. As far as Preacher could see, the odds were just about even on which side would get wiped from the face of the earth first. The six men who had died in the battle were buried on top of a small hill about a quarter mile from the fort. Preacher and several other men went along with the burial detail to act as guards. From the top of the hill, they could see a pretty good distance all around. The Blackfoot might still be able to sneak up on him, but at least it was less likely with men keeping watch. Langley brought his Bible from the trading post and read over the graves. The other men took off their hats and caps and stood around solemnly, knowing it was mostly a matter of luck they weren't among the ones in the ground. The short service over, everybody headed back to the fort, not losing any time getting behind the sturdy gates and the thick stockade walls. With no real work to be done other than keeping a watch out for the Blackfoot, Preacher spoke to Langley.
Pick out some men to stand guard. Everybody else needs to get some rest while they can.
I'm not sure anyone else can relax enough to sleep under these circumstances. Those savages could come back at any time.
They could, but they can't get near the fort in broad daylight without being seen. And when a man who's tired enough gets a chance to sleep, you'd be surprised how quick he forgets about everything else.
I suppose. It's worth a try anyway.
Count the men off in fours and have different shifts on guard duty. Change them out every 3 hours. That way everybody gets to rest. I'll be part of the first watch.
That's not necessary. You were already up all night, then you went out and did all that scouting. You should get some sleep now.
When the mountain man opened his mouth to object, Langley smiled and raised a hand to stop him.
It was your idea to take turns standing guard, Preacher.
All right, all right. I reckon I am a mite tired. I'm not as young as I used to be, you know.
You have more strength and vitality than any five men here put together. But go and rest anyway. I'll arrange the guard details. There's a small extra room in my living quarters with a bunk in it. Why don't you go and lie down there?
Well, I figured I'd just find a corner somewhere and curl up.
There's no need for you to do that. Go sleep on a real bed.
Well, thank you.
Judith stood on the porch of the trading post, resting her hands on the railing.
Can I do something for you, Preacher?
Your husband's setting up guard shifts. We only need about a dozen men at a time keeping an eye out for the Blackfoot, so rest of us are going to get some shut-eye. Mr. Langley said I could use the spare room in your living quarters.
Of course, I'll show you where it is. I hope you don't expect too much. It's really not very fancy.
I wouldn't know what to do if it was. My idea of fancy is any piece of ground without too many rocks in it.
The trading post was empty as she led him into it. The men had already gotten everything they needed, at least for the moment.
It was very frightening last night, wasn't it? I mean, when the Indians attacked and all those fiery arrows came raining down on the fort.
I knew what you meant. And yeah, any man who wasn't scared had to be just too blasted dumb to know what was going on.
Even you were afraid?
Look, I know I got this reputation as the big lobo wolf of these parts, but that don't mean I never get scared. Reckon I get just as scared as anybody else when things are going bad.
I really doubt that.
No, it's the truth. Maybe the difference is that when things are going bad, I feel like I got to put them right again, and that means doing something, taking action. Once you start doing that in the middle of a fight, you're too busy to remember that you're scared. All you're trying to do is get from one chore to the next.
That sounds like a good way to look at things. When the battle was going on, I didn't do anything but sit in here and hug myself and pray that I would survive. I should have been out there helping. Then I would have been too busy to be frightened, like you said.
Not in a fight like that. That was no place for you. You knew how to load a gun?
Not really. I've seen Ethan do it, of course.
Well, get him to teach you. That way, if there's ever a need for it, you can reload for the men while they're fighting.
All right. That sounds like a good idea.
You might even get him to show you how to shoot a rifle, too, after all this is over. It's a mighty good skill to have out here.
You sound confident we're all going to live through this siege.
Well, now that's another thing. If you go into a ruckus thinking you're gonna lose, chances are you will. As long as my heart's beating and my blood's flowing, I don't intend to give up, no matter what the odds are against me.
I think you deserve that reputation you have. Come on.
Judith took him through the living quarters to a small room.
I'll let you get some rest. But before I go, there's one thing.
Yes, ma'am.
You didn't forget about the promise you made to me, did you?
No, ma'am. I sure didn't.
Preacher didn't mention the fact that he could have been killed in that wild melee on the parapet, in which case he wouldn't have been able to keep the promise. Judith seemed to be aware of it anyway, because she reached into the pocket of her dress and took out a small pistol, which she held up to show him.
Just in case. I had Ethan load it for me. I told him I wanted to be able to fight if the Indians broke in here.
He believed that?
He acted like he did, anyway. You shouldn't be here.
Preacher wasn't certain how long he'd been asleep when something roused him. Not long enough, that was for damn sure. As soon as he'd stretched out on the bunk, he'd fallen into a deep, dreamless slumber.
I had to see you.
Preacher didn't have any trouble recognizing the voice. It belonged to Wiley Cortland.
There's no telling what's going to happen. We may not live through this.
Preacher says you should never go into a fight expecting to lose.
I don't give a damn what Preacher says. I had to tell you how I feel about you, Judith.
I know that already, Wiley. You've made it perfectly clear, despite the fact that you should have accepted my decision graciously.
I'm sorry. I can't be gracious when it comes to losing the woman I love.
Are you sure you love me, or is it that you just don't want to lose to Ethan?
I'll show you how much I really love you.
Preacher did not like the sound of that. He swung his legs off the bunk and stood up. The last thing in the world he wanted to do was get mixed up deeper in that blasted romantic triangle, but he wasn't going to stand by and do nothing while Cortland made advances to another man's wife.
Wiley, don't!
You don't mean that.
I most certainly do. I love my husband.
Evidently, Judith's rebuke of Cortland had made him hesitate. Preacher was not going to interfere if he didn't have to. Judith would probably be embarrassed if she knew he had overheard most of the conversation.
But your husband doesn't love you. If he did, he wouldn't have dragged you out here to this godforsaken wilderness where you're bound to be killed.
Ethan swore he'd protect me, and I believe him. The job was too good to turn down. He's going to be an important man in the fur company someday.
You know better than that. He'll never be more than a flunky stuck in some out-of-the-way trading post. If you stay with him, you'll grow old before your time from all the hard work and danger. And that's if you survive the Indians and the wild animals and the terrible weather.
And what could you offer me? You're a trader now, too, only in horses instead of furs.
That horse herd was just an excuse to come out here and find you.
Then it's true? You knew I was here all along, like Ethan said?
Of course I knew! I asked around until I found out about Langley taking the job with the fur company. And it wasn't difficult to find out where he'd been sent. Don't mistake what I'm saying. I plan to make a nice profit on the horses. But the real reason I came is so I can take you back to St. Louis with me. You'll be safe there and I can give you a comfortable life.
I have a life. My life is here with Ethan.
You're wrong. I'm taking you back. We can leave now, today, while the savages are gone. I don't care about the horses anymore. I'll tell Otis to get whatever he can for them and send me my share of the profits. The important thing is that you'll be with me, where you belong.
You're insane. I'm not going anywhere with you, Wiley. For one thing, Preacher says it's not safe to leave the fort, even though the Indians have withdrawn for the moment.
The Indians are gone. And if we move fast enough, we'll be far away from here before they ever come back. They won't bother us.
I don't care! I'm married. I won't leave my husband.
You will. If I have to drag you back.
Like it or not, Preacher's interference couldn't be postponed any longer. Cortland and Judith stood beside the table. His hands were clamped tightly on her upper arms.
That's enough.
Preacher, I didn't know you were here.
Yeah, I reckon you didn't.
Look, my friend, this is none of your business. It's between the lady and me.
When I see somebody treating a woman rough, I make it my business. Now let go of her.
I'm not hurting her.
I said, let go.
Cortland took his hands away from her arms and moved back. As soon as she was free, her hand dipped swiftly into her pocket and came up with a little pistol she had shown Preacher earlier.
Judith, don't! For God's sake!
Now, I don't blame you for wanting to shoot him, ma'am, but it might be a good idea to hold off on it. We're liable to need every man we got when Red Knife shows up again.
Cortland was mighty close to death, and he seemed to know it, too. His face had gone almost as pale as his hair. Judith lowered the pistol. Carefully, she let the hammer back down.
Get out of here, Wiley. I don't ever want to see you again.
You don't mean that.
I mean every word of it. I was willing to accept you as a friend. I wanted to be fair to you. But you forfeited all that by coming here today and behaving like you did. I see now that we can't be friends after all.
Of course we can.
No.
All right. If you're sure that's the way you want it.
It is.
I hope you don't have cause to regret that decision someday. Someday soon.
I think the lady told you to get out.
I'm going.
I never expected him to do something like that. I knew it bothered him that I chose Ethan over him, but I really did hope that we could be friends.
Some fellows just can't seem to see things that way. I reckon Cortland's one of them.
Preacher gestured toward the pistol.
It might be a good idea to put that away now.
Judith slipped it back into her pocket.
I really was going to shoot him, you know.
Yeah, I know it. He knew it, too. He wound up more scared of you than he was of me.
I don't know about that. If he knew how badly I was shaking inside.
You kept it under control. That's mighty important.
Maybe. But I...
Preacher reacted instinctively and put his arms around her. Given the circumstances, he supposed it was an understandable reaction when Ethan Langley suddenly appeared in the doorway.
What the hell is going on here?
Miss Langley's mighty upset. I reckon you should be over here instead of me.
Damn right I should be. Take your hands off my wife.
Preacher stepped back from Judith.
Ethan, it's not...
For God's sake, Preacher, it's bad enough I have to worry about Cortland. Now you're making advances on my wife, too?
Ethan, listen to me. It's not what you're thinking. Can't you see I was crying? I was upset, and Preacher was just trying to comfort me, that's all. It's like he was my uncle or my grandfather.
Preacher wasn't sure if that made him feel much better or not.
What were you so upset about?
I listened to that battle for what seemed like hours last night, Ethan. I didn't know but what any minute a horde of screaming Indians would burst into the trading post and kill me. Or worse. I didn't know if you were dead or alive. Don't you think all of that is enough to make a person upset?
Of course it is. I didn't mean to make things worse, Judith. I'm sorry.
He went to her then and took her in his arms. Langley looked over his wife's shoulder at the mountain man.
Sorry, Preacher. I didn't understand what was going on.
Preacher gave him a curt nod. It was as much forgiveness as he felt like allowing. Judith hadn't told her husband the real reason she was upset, because she didn't want Langley going after Cortland again. Despite her anger, she knew open warfare between the two men wouldn't do anybody any good. Preacher gave her credit for that. Besides, the things she had said to Langley were no doubt true. She had feared for her life and his during the battle with the Blackfoot.
How long did I sleep?
A couple hours. I'm sorry I disturbed you.
That's fine. Nothing to worry about.
Go back and get some more rest. Your turn on guard duty won't come up for a while yet.
Just then, Quint Harrigan appeared in the doorway between the trading post's main room and the bourgeois' living quarters.
Hate to bother you folks, but I reckon you'd better come take a look at this, Preacher. You too, Mr. Langley.
What is it?
We got company again.
When Preacher, Langley, and Harrigan were on the parapet, several of the men at the wall stood aside to let them step up and get a good look. Preacher wasn't surprised by what he saw. 500 yards away, the Blackfoot war party waited. Some mounted on ponies, but most on foot. These warriors weren't just the survivors of the previous attacks. The war party had grown to bigger numbers, just as the dying scout had said it would. As Preacher turned, he saw the ranks of Blackfoot weren't just on one side of the fort. They were lined up all around it.
My God, we're surrounded. They have us completely cut off. We're trapped.
We already were. But now every man Jack can see that for himself. So there won't be any more talk about making a run for it. Anybody who tries to slip through those lines will be dead mighty quick.
But what are we gonna do?
Same thing we were planning on before. We'll hold out until that supply boat gets here and brings those cannons with it.
Can we actually do that?
We're about to find out, because here they come again.
The Blackfoot launched several hundred arrows into the air at once.
Take cover! Take cover!
As long as the riflemen on the wall were forced to take cover, they couldn't fire at the charging warriors. Preacher knew they were going to have to risk standing up again. He moved first, rising high enough to thrust his rifle barrel over the wall. Some of the warriors carried blazing torches to set the walls on fire. Flaming arrows hadn't done the trick. Maybe the blazing brands would.
Get the ones with the torches! Don't let them get into the fort! Langley! Get men with buckets of water up here!
Langley jerked his head in a nod to show he understood and headed for the closest ladder. Quint Harrigan had taken a position at the wall close to Preacher. He drilled one of the attackers.
Stubborn varmints, aren't they?
Suddenly, an arrow stuck through Harrigan's neck. Appearing so suddenly, it was almost like magic.
Quint!
It was too late to do anything for Harrigan. The life was already fading from his eyes as he wheeled around aimlessly and plunged off the parapet. Men carrying buckets of water scrambled up the ladders onto the parapet. Preacher pointed to where the base of the wall was on fire about 20 feet to his right.
Dump your buckets there, and some of you stay back in reserve.
It was utter chaos along the parapet. Some men fired at the attackers, while others tried to extinguish the flames breaking out here and there. All the while, arrows continued to fall. The Indians were so close now, Preacher set his rifle aside and started using his pistol. Though his eyes watered from the smoke, Preacher saw the attackers falling back. Their efforts to torch the place had failed, and the deadly accurate shots from him and the other defenders were driving them off. He leaned out and looked back and forth along the wall. There were some charred places, but the wall was intact, without too much damage done.
Make sure all the fires are out!
Several men had formed fire lines and continued passing buckets from the ditch to the ladders and up to the parapet. Preacher looked around. Several bodies slumped here and there with arrows protruding from them. The attack had cost the defenders more men, and Quint Harrigan was among them. The red-bearded trapper's body lay on the ground, blood from his mangled throat forming a dark puddle around his head. Harrigan was far from the first friend Preacher had lost, and doubtless he would be far from the last, too. But the man's death still hurt. He'd been a valiant fighter, and he could always be counted on for a quick grin and a joke. But Preacher didn't dwell on those thoughts as he made sure his rifle and all four pistols were reloaded. The best way to honor Harrigan's death was to be ready when the men who had killed him attacked again. Preacher figured the war party numbered at least 400. The fort's defenders had inflicted a lot of casualties on the Blackfoot, but they were still overwhelmingly outnumbered. The walls of Fort Gifford were the only thing standing between the white men and death. Red Knife was smart enough to know that, which is why he had concentrated his efforts on the walls. As long as the Blackfoot were willing to die, he could continue his attack again and again until the defenders were whittled down to the point that they couldn't hold the walls. When that happened, it would all be over. It was a race between certain death and the arrival of a supply boat from downriver. In any siege, there are lulls in the action, and this was just the case. The Blackfoot withdrew, but not out of sight. They wanted the fort's defenders to know they were still there, and Red Knife wanted the men in the fort to just sit there and contemplate their imminent death.